Tonight, we're very glad that you are here. We are saddened by the fact that tonight will be the last service for Sheila and for Chelsea, and we want you to know how much we're going to miss you. And we just pray that God's blessing will be with you, and we know that it will, and you're not that far away. And we certainly look forward to seeing you again real soon. But we love you and wish you all of God's richest blessings, both of you. We talked this morning about parenting and the importance of being a good parent, the importance of training up a child in the way that that child should go. And I'll tell you, the tough thing about being a parent is that there's no manual that just lays out how you're to do it. And the Bible certainly does give us instruction, but the fact of the matter is that for the most part, we, quote, learn how to be a parent by the fact that, well, we were a child and we were brought up by our parents, and therefore the things that were done with us, well, that's just sort of unconsciously the way that we then conduct our home. And that's the way that we tend to act as parents and the way that we tend to lead as parents. And that is something which is natural, and it's both good and bad. The fact of the matter is that there are things about, or probably things about the upbringing of all of us that were absolutely very good and need to be emulated. And yet there may have been some mistakes that our parents have made, and sometimes we even catch ourselves. How many times have you said to yourself, okay, well, this was a mistake that I've seen my parents made as I've looked at that, and I'm not going to make that mistake. And then one day you catch yourself doing exactly the same thing with your kids. That's just something that happens all the time, and it shows us the power of our own upbringing and our own background to just unconsciously shape the kind of parent that we are. And so, like I have said, that is really both a good and a bad thing. And I would like to suggest that we think for a moment about this statement that is made in Lamentations chapter 3 and verse 40. Here the prophet said, speaking for God, "Let us examine and probe our ways, and let us return to the Lord." Let us examine and probe our ways. That's such a great statement to talk about the introspection that God expects us to use in every aspect of our Christian life. But may I suggest at this juncture, when it comes to parenting, God expects us to be introspective and to examine our ways. And you'll be making a big mistake as a parent, and I'll be making a big mistake as a parent, if we just sort of blindly do what we're used to, and not think about it, not analyze it, and not analyze and see those things that maybe were good, or those things that maybe need correction, or those things even about how we ourselves have already been parenting our children. Maybe the ways that we've been parenting our kids are not always the best. Maybe they could stand to be improved in some way. Maybe not a lot. Maybe just a tweak here and there, but we need to be willing to do that. Sometimes our parenting may need a lot of correction. But you're never going to know unless you do what this passage says. Let us examine and probe our ways. That suggests to me an intense kind of scrutiny. And I would suggest that what we need to always be doing as parents is to intensely scrutinize our concepts of this, what our goals are, and what our methods are. And are we using the best kind of methods in order to be the best parent possible? Let me suggest a couple of passages to you here, well-known passages that come from the Apostle Paul. To the Ephesians in chapter 6 and verse 4, the Apostle said, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord." Don't provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. You know what that passage just says to me? One word, balance. Isn't that really what Paul's talking about? Parental authority must be balanced. We dare not go to one extreme or the other. He says, fathers, you need to bring up your children in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. In fact, woe unto that father or that mother or that grandfather or grandmother that does not seek to bring up their children and grandchildren in the discipline and instruction of the Lord. If we just sort of bypass that and we just ignore our responsibility and we don't give our kids the instruction and the discipline, and sometimes discipline has to be punitive in nature, if we don't give them all of that, then we are shirking our responsibility. And our kids are the ones that suffer. But Paul says, first of all, fathers, don't provoke your children to anger. And that suggests to me balance in all of this. In fact, in Colossians chapter 3 and verse 21, he really emphasizes that point and says, fathers, do not exasperate your children so that they will not lose heart. Don't exasperate them so they will not lose heart. Or some versions say, so they won't lose spirit. You know, authority means having power over somebody else. To have parental authority means that you are in power over somebody else. Whether it is sheer physical power, where at least when the kids are smaller and you physically can dominate them, or even as they get bigger and they could probably take you. But there's a power that you have because of the authority of your position over them. And so authority necessarily means power. But whenever you have power over somebody else, there's always the possibility it can be abused. It can be exerted to such a point where it is extreme. And sometimes parents, if they're not balanced in their parenting, they can be so concerned about discipline that they unnecessarily provoke their children to anger. Paul doesn't say, make sure your kids don't ever get angry with you. But what he does say is, fathers, don't provoke them to anger. And that just kind of suggests the idea of just keep on and on where it just unnecessarily just makes them angry. As you just exert that authority in such a way and wield that rod of authority in such a way that it just causes them to lose heart. In fact, again, as he says to the Colossians, don't exasperate your children. Don't make them lose their spirit. Don't make them lose heart. And sometimes if we're not careful, we can be so domineering and so intimidating that we absolutely make our kids feel like there's nothing they can ever do that's right. There's nothing they can ever do that's good enough. They'll never be able to please you. They're always wrong. And it just absolutely just causes them to lose spirit. And we as parents need to make sure that we don't allow that to happen to our children. Because they're our children and they're under our care and we love them and we care for them. But we need to recognize with power there is that danger of abuse. And certainly that's the case when it comes to parenting. When it comes to bringing up our children in the discipline of the Lord. We need to be balanced, well balanced in all of that. With that in mind, let me suggest, if I may, just a few things that come to my mind as some wrong motivations for discipline. And I'm talking here about those things that prompt us to discipline our children. And I suppose especially in this context, I'm thinking of discipline in its more punitive form, sometimes in overt punishment or sometimes just in the fact that we're getting on to our kids. What are some wrong motivations for that? Sometimes people in a position of a parent can discipline their kids with the motivation of, this is my way to vent my anger. Isn't that true? How many of us have never been guilty of that? How many of us have been guilty of that? I'll sure raise my hand. Now, I had a student at Fordham College several years ago. I was talking in some Bible class and made the statement, you should never discipline your children when you're angry. And I made the retort, well, if that were the case, I don't know that I'd ever be disciplining my children because I'm always angry when I'm having to discipline my children. That's just sort of, that goes hand in hand. But, you know, she'd been taught that little maxim, don't ever discipline anger. You know, well, I don't know that's quite exactly right. The fact of the matter is, the Bible talks about God in His anger coming in judgment. So it isn't the fact that you're angry that's the problem. In fact, very often, there's a good reason for you to be angry. Yeah. But we need to make sure that we're not disciplining because this is a way for me to vent my anger. And that's a different story. Because the person who's just disciplining and especially getting on to that child, sometimes it turns into yelling at that child or punishing that child, and it's a way for me to just vent my anger. Then you're taking all that anger out on that child, and wisdom is probably not directing your actions. And it reminds me of what the sages in Proverbs talk about. The person who is filled with anger is the person most likely to have suddenly donned the garb of the fool, who acts without thinking, who speaks without thinking. And so we need to be careful. Yes, we're angry with our children, but we need to make sure that we're in control of this and we're thinking about this, and I'm not just reacting because I'm mad and I want to vent. Because I tell you what, you're in that position of power, and that's when you're very likely to abuse that power that you have at the expense of that child. And it doesn't matter what that kid has done wrong. Doesn't matter what that kid has done wrong. They never deserve to be the object of you just venting your anger. They don't deserve that. No, they deserve discipline. But they deserve discipline given in wisdom. And anger that's controlled. So that it is given in such a way that they will not be exasperated and will not lose heart. I'll give you another wrong motivation for discipline. To look good to other people. Real easy trap for us to fall into. In fact, young parents very often can fall into this trap. Because you're a brand new parent. And for the first time, you know, you got that little toddler here, you know, and toddlers tend to do things, you know, that just call attention to themselves, and everybody's watching, and so, okay, now, everybody's looking at me, and you want to make sure that you're giving a good impression to all of them about what a good parent you are. And sometimes, we exert our authority in such a way that really is not necessary and really is not wise, but we just want to make sure we don't give the impression to anyone else that we're one of those parents that don't have any control over their kids. And really, if you stop and think about it, that's a horrible motivation to discipline your child. Because, well, I want to give a good impression to people who are watching me. That's like what Jesus talked about in Matthew chapter 6, where he talked about those who do their good deeds to be seen of men. It isn't a good thing to spank your child when your real motivation is you want other people to see, boy, they discipline their kid. I mean, maybe your kid needs a spanking, but the reason for spanking your child should be the kid really needs a spanking, not just because, well, you want to look good to other people and show them what a good disciplining parent you are. We need to think about those things. And again, I'm just talking about some things that sometimes, if we're not careful, we just kind of do these things without thinking. And we need to, as the passage in Lamentations says, we need to probe our ways. Sometimes people discipline their kids out of just fear. And this is understandable. You're so worried about your kid and what may happen, and well, this may be an indication the kid's going to just go off and be a reprobate and do this and that. And so we just overreact out of fear. And we don't know what to do, but we're just so afraid. And so we just do whatever. And sometimes it's just the wrong thing. And it's an overreaction. And what's motivating us isn't wisdom. It's not logic. It's not reasoning. It's just, well, we're so afraid of what they're going to become. Well, okay, but we need to calm down and act wisely in our discipline. Sometimes people are motivated to discipline their kids simply as a reaction to their own upbringing. Sometimes it's an overreaction to their own upbringing. How many parents fail to discipline their kids and put restrictions on their children because, well, my parents were just so hard on me, and I don't want to make that mistake. Well, okay, maybe your parents were too hard on you. I don't know. Maybe they were. But you need to be careful that, okay, your motivation here and what is just driving you in all this isn't just this extreme reaction to your own upbringing and just, you're just dead set, I'm not going to make the mistakes of my parents. And what you may do is make other mistakes then on the other side of it. And that happens a lot. And sometimes it's the other way around. Sometimes people see that, you know, well, I just had a nothing kind of parent that just didn't give us any instruction or anything, and so I'm not going to make that mistake, and so then you're just hard as nails. And everything's motivated by your reaction to your own upbringing. Well, my point in all this is, it's not to ignore the mistakes that maybe were there in your own upbringing. I mentioned that at the very beginning of this lesson. There may have been some real mistakes there. But the point is to really probe all that and analyze all that and think about all that so that you're not just going to go to the other extreme, because that happens all the time. So reacting to your own upbringing, that's not the good motivation for discipline. And I'll give you one more. Sometimes people discipline, and especially I'm thinking of discipline in the punitive sense, just because they're lazy. Sometimes that's just kind of a quick, easy way to say, well, I've done something. I've handled it. And sometimes we're just too quick to spank, too quick to just react with that kind of corporal punishment. And I'm not denying there's a time for that. But that sure shouldn't be just kind of the first thing we do. But I'll tell you what, that's the easiest thing to do. Oh, yeah, it's always the easiest thing to do. I mean, once you get in the mode of, you know, physically spanking or disciplining your child, you know, I mean, it becomes pretty easy to just to handle it. Okay, I'm going to handle it, and whip out the belt. Let's just, you know, let the sparks fly, you know. But sometimes it's just laziness. I don't want to have to really deal with the situation. I don't want to have to really involve myself and go through the hard work of trying to figure out, okay, what's the real problem here? What's going on? And sometimes just the quick fix for a lazy parent is to whip out the belt. That's not a good motivation. That's not the way to do this. And that's exactly the kind of thing that is very likely going to cause a person to not be that well-balanced parent that Paul was emphasizing that we need to be. In Hebrews chapter 2 and verse 17, the Hebrew writer is talking about Jesus and why he is the perfect high priest. He says he had to be made like his brethren in all things, so that he might become a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God. For since he himself was tempted in that which he has suffered, he is able to come to the aid of those who are tempted. And so the point the Hebrew writer is making is the reason why Jesus is a perfect high priest is because he became one of us so that he could empathize with what we go through and understand what we go through and understand our temptations. Now, he stresses he never gave in to those temptations. In chapter 4 of the book of Hebrews, he emphasizes he was without sin, but yet he was tempted in all points, as are we. And so as he says here, Jesus is able to really understand what we go through and therefore to be a merciful and faithful high priest. Now, what in the world does this have to do with parenting? Well, may I suggest this? As parents, we need to be able to empathize with our kids and what they're going through, what their lot is like in life, and what their temptations are, and why they have such a struggle, and why they make the mistakes that they do. That is exactly what Jesus is doing as our high priest. Exactly. And the Hebrew writer says that's why he's such a marvelous high priest, because he absolutely understands what we go through, and he understands that because he became one of us and went through all of those. So he knows. He knows how hard it is. He understands what that is like. And you know what? When you think about us as parents, you know, the advantage we have over our kids is this. They don't know what it's like to be in our position, but we know what it's like to be in theirs. That is, we should know if we will remember. I talk to a lot of people about their childhood memories, and I've talked to some people that just tell me, I don't remember anything from my childhood. I just don't. And I'm just incredulous at that. I mean, my childhood is just vivid in my memory. I mean, I can remember not just events, I can remember my thoughts, I can remember my feelings at that time. It's just all vivid to me. And maybe the reason why that's, I'm just a big kid. I mean, I like to play volleyball and football and go on the roller coaster ride, you know, and all you old fogies just sit there and eat cotton candy, and I want to be with the kids. You know, maybe that's the reason. I don't know. But I'm just saying that, I mean, I remember all of that vividly. And as parents, and I'm not only trying to hold myself up as the ideal parent, but I'm just saying that as parents, we need to make sure that we turn on our memory switch and we remember what it was like to have to be a child and to have those rules and to have those regulations and to have that parental authority and to feel that parental pressure. We need to make sure that we remember that so we can empathize with our children. And I've used the word empathy for a reason. The word empathy is stronger than sympathy. You might sympathize with what somebody else is going through, but somebody who's been there can empathize with you. They know what it is. And we've been there where our kids are. We should be able to remember. In fact, we must make ourselves remember what that's like so that we can be merciful and faithful in our parental role. Just like Jesus in his leadership role is merciful and faithful, the Hebrew writer said. So we need to be able to remember all that, and that will help us understand better about the wise way to handle our kids in various circumstances that come up. Sometimes, if you'll think back and you'll remember how it was like for you, It isn't that what your kid has done is any less wrong. You just understand what was motivating them. And maybe you can help them with that. Or sometimes when your kids have just absolutely fallen flat on their face, if you'll remember how you felt when you fell flat on your face and you were trying to turn things around and get back in your parents' good graces, and how difficult all that was. And for goodness sakes, we need to remember what that peer pressure was like. You know, it is so easy for us, now that we've become adults, to look back at those childhood problems and to say, well, those were just childish. And of course, to a large extent, well, yeah, they were childish, and those problems aren't as big as the problems that you have as an adult. Well, yeah, that's true. But to that child at that stage in their life, aren't they absolutely just monumental? Remember how monumental those childhood problems were and those issues of peer pressure and fitting in and wanting to be accepted and the struggle with the fact that, okay, you're this Christian and yet you want to be with those kids and you're always a little bit of the oddball and it just, it's a constant struggle. Remember all that? Remember how hard that was? I'm not saying that to excuse kids when they are overcome by those temptations, but you need to be able to understand and therefore help them through those hard times. And so we need to be able to empathize with our kids and think about what our kids are having to go through. And how about this one? Think about what your kids are having to go through, having to submit to you. Maybe you're not just the easiest parent in the world to talk to. We talked this morning about how important it is for us to talk with our children about the things of God. Maybe part of the problem is you're just not real easy to talk to. And if that kind of offends you, I'm there. I'm always there, always open. Remember how hard it was for you to talk with your parents? So just think about how difficult it is for your kids sometimes to have to just live under your authority, in your household, with all that. Just think about that. And maybe what we ought to think about too in all this is how difficult it is for your kids having to live under the parental authority of someone like you who has your own flaws. Because we all do. As parents, we make mistakes. We make a lot of mistakes. And the ones who have to suffer the brunt of our mistakes are our kids. And so we need to think about that. What's it like for my child to have to submit to me? Or when I just go off, you know, when I get my buttons pushed and then what's that like for my kid to have to deal with that? And maybe what will help you is remembering what it was like when you were a kid, having to deal with all that. I think this is just crucial for us as parents, to be the well-balanced parents that Paul was talking about. We need to be able to empathize with our kids. Let me talk with you about one final thing. Something I mentioned in this morning's lesson, but I especially want to emphasize tonight. We need to allow our kids to ask questions about faith, about the Lord, about God. Not just, as we talked about this morning, you know, why are these commandments of God the best way? How about even more fundamental questions than that? Is this really the Word of God? How do you know? Your kids have that question. Your kids have that question. How do we even know that there's a God, period? How do we know Jesus is the Son of God? I mean, why don't we serve Muhammad as a prophet? How do we know Jesus is the true Son of God and Muhammad isn't a prophet of Allah? How do you know that? Well, kids have a right to ask those questions. And sometimes if we're not careful, here's what happens to us. When our kids are growing up and starting to ask, because you know, whether they verbalize them or not, they're asking them. They're asking them in their own mind. So as our kids are growing up, and when they maybe ask some question that you know, questions a doctrine, it's so easy for our reaction that we suddenly, you know, that just pushes our fear button. Oh no, there's some false teaching in my kid's mind. I need to just jump in there and just stamp that out. And you know, how dare you ask that question? And of course there's a God. Yes, the Bible's the word of God. What have you been listening to? You know, we just begin to go off on them. But those are good questions. Nothing wrong with those questions. In fact, everybody needs to have their own faith. We need to have our own faith. Even Paul talked about that in Romans 14. The faith which you have is your own before God. You can't force your kids to have your faith. In fact, it's not your faith that God wants. He wants them to have their own faith. And so what you need to do is to talk with your kids about these things and questions. And why should we believe in? Why should we believe Jesus is the Son of God? What evidence is there for all those things? And there's a whole lot of evidence. There's a whole lot of good reasons. But we need to talk with our kids about that. And our kids, they don't know all those reasons. And so they have those questions. And so they need to be able to ask those questions and not get just, you know, chopped off for how dare you question that. You know? No. They're just asking because they don't know the answers. And so talk with them about that. Remember what Paul said in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 11? Therefore, knowing the fear of the Lord, we persuade men. We talked about this passage a couple of Sundays ago. We persuade men. That's what the apostles and the first century prophets and the preachers of the gospel were doing. They weren't seeking to just take the gospel of Jesus Christ and ram it down somebody's throat. What they were trying to do was reason and persuade people. In fact, in Acts chapter 17, Paul comes to Thessalonica and he says, and the text says, according to Paul's custom, he went to them and for three Sabbaths reasoned with them from the scriptures, explaining and giving evidence. So the gospel of Jesus Christ, when it was preached in the first century, it was never preached in such a way that, okay, we're just trying to force this down people's throat. It was always reasoning and talking with people and giving the evidence and persuading people to come to a faith in Jesus Christ. Now, we understand that even about ourselves. If somebody tried to force something into our adult minds, we'd be upset with it. No, you're not going to force me. Now, you show me the evidence for this, and then we can reason together about it, but you're not going to just force me to accept this. Okay. But why do we think that somehow it's different with our children? No, our children, they're going to believe in Jesus because I said so. They're going to believe in God because I said so. And our house is a godly house, like we talked about this morning. You know, so me and my house, we're going to serve the Lord. But Joshua wasn't talking about that he could somehow force his faith down the throat of his kids. No, the whole point in all this is that especially as our kids are getting older, where they are naturally questioning and naturally trying to reason about these things and question, you know, why should I believe these things that I was brought up with? You know, are these things really true? Is there really good reason to believe all this? We need to be talking with our kids and reasoning with them and persuading them
just like we would anybody else. We were trying to convert to Jesus Christ.
See, that's our mistake. We understand if I'm trying to convert my next door neighbor, okay, I don't try to ram that down his throat. I reason with him, and I sit down, I talk with him, I give the evidence, show all that, and I persuade my next door neighbor. But with our kids, we're not trying to convert them by reasoning with them. No, we're trying to force them. That's not the way it works. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not suggesting you don't bring up your children in the discipline and admonition of the Lord. I'm not suggesting that you take the approach that some foolish parents are, well, I don't want to force my kids, so I'm never going to make them go to church. No, when they're in your household and under your authority, you need to exert that authority and bring them up in the discipline and admonition of the Lord. But when they ask questions about, well, how do we know this is true? Don't get upset with them and don't upbraid them. Don't make them feel like they can't ever ask you those questions. Talk with them. Talk with them. And I think what you'll find is they... Since you brought them up the way you have, they see the inherent reasonableness of this to a large extent, but they have questions and they need answers, and you can give them that if you just talk with them and reason with them. And if there are questions that they ask that you don't know the answer to, and that's probably what we're afraid of a lot. What if they ask me something I don't know the answer to? Oh my goodness. You know what you say? Just what you say to your next door neighbor when he asks you a question about the Bible and you don't know the answer to that question. Well, I don't know. That's a good question. I'll find out and we'll talk about that. Say that exact same thing to your kids. You know what that shows your kids? Is that you're just like them, trying to learn and to reason and trying to be a child of God. Just like they need to be. And ultimately, folks, that's what our kids need to see in all this. Our kids need to see that in the final analysis, we, the parents, are really in the same precise relationship with God that they are. We're all children of our Creator. We're all children of God. We're on the same level. It may be at this moment that I'm in a parental role over this person, but what I'm trying to do is to reason with them and help them grow and have their own faith so that they, of their own volition, will choose to serve God in their adult years, just like I'm trying to do. But they've got to make that choice for themselves, and we're all just children of God trying to serve Him. And so, have an atmosphere in your home where some of these questions, even about the Bible and faith and truth and all that, have an atmosphere where it's okay for those questions to be asked, and we're going to talk about those, and you're going to reason with them. And I think what you'll find is that your kids will really grow and blossom and be strong believers because you're helping them see all of this. And if there are things that you don't know the answer to, well, then find out. And that kind of takes us back to what we said earlier. You know, being a parent, it's hard work. It's just hard. You know? And you can't be lazy. And it's a full-time job in the literal sense of that expression. It's full time. It's the only, or I guess one of the few really full time jobs that there are, being a parent. Well, I appreciate your listening to me and all of this. We need to examine and probe our ways. And I hope these things that we've talked about this morning and tonight will be a benefit to you. But we need to think about them. And ask the Lord's help and the Lord's blessing as we seek to be the best kind of parents that we can be. And if you made mistakes, join the club. You know, we all make mistakes.
But strive to do better. Really strive to do better. And love your kids and let them know that you love them and let them know that you're there to be of help to them and you're a well-balanced parental figure in your exercise of authority. I appreciate you listening to me. Is there someone tonight who needs to respond to the gospel of Jesus in some way? We hope that you will, and let us help you as together we stand and sing this song of encouragement.